Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. It was a dominant victory for Max Verstappen and Red Bull in today's Belgian Grand Prix. A 1-2 for the team. Max finishing about 2 weeks up the road, starting not quite at the back of the grid because there are a lot of penalties to take into account, but a 14th grid spot, technically even starting 13th. And whilst he and fellow championship contender Charles Leclerc did start at the back and both made good progress on lap one, after that, well, their days did diverge. We'll get into that and why it was an amazing day for Red Bull and not a good one for Ferrari and the other winners and losers from today's event. I'm joined by Jess McFadden, Hayden Cobb, and Luke Smith, who is fresh back from the track. And Luke, what was it like getting back into Formula One after the summer break?
Really, really good, thank you, Martin. It was a nice sort of back-to-school feel in Formula One. I mean, it's lovely in the paddock. You see lots of people, lots of big sort of life events have happened over the past 3 weeks or so for many of our colleagues and Formula One paddock members. That's been very, very nice to see. And yeah, it was good to catch up after a little while. So yeah, that was all good. And then when we finally got into the on-track action, obviously, I think there was a familiar result at the end of it. I think obviously we had to pick up on all the Fernando Alonso, Daniel Ricciardo, Oscar Piastri. So much has happened on the news cycle. But when we finally got on track, it was a very familiar result at the end of it. And Verstappen, I think, delivering probably one of the most dominant displays I can remember in recent F1 history, despite starting so far back. And I think a real death knell maybe for Ferrari's championship hopes, if it had not already sounded. It does seem that this display is really, really put into perspective just how far clear of the pack Red Bull is right now.
Yeah, Ferrari's mentioned that Red Bull are really quick in a straight line, but also really quick in the corners, which doesn't sound great, does it?
It's sort of Ferrari. Win-win, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. Luke, in terms of your analysis of watching the race in person today, where do you think Red Bull have got it so right? Because, you know, clearly technical directive 039 has not hobbled the teams that some people thought it was. Some people even thought it was a conspiracy and aimed at slowing down the quicker teams. But after perhaps some worry a few weeks ago, Red Bull don't need to worry about whatever technical directives have come out because they were brutally fast today. But what in your mind was it that won it for them today?
I think it just speaks to how good the RB18 car is as an all-round package. As you said, it was quickest in a straight line and then quickest through the corners as well. So really, there's no upside for Ferrari. The Red Bull RB18's straight line speed. That's been its big asset so far this season, where it's really taken a step ahead of the Ferrari. But as Spa, obviously, we know how important that is. It's a 1.2-mile run from when you exit La Source all the way to Les Combes, obviously through Eau Rouge, Radion, up the Kemmel Strait. And that is where I think you would expect most of the lap time gains to be made by the Red Bulls. But it was actually through the second sector, through all the sort of twisty bits, where Ferrari running their higher downforce package compared to Red Bull this weekend would have been expected to take a step forward and maybe claw back some of that time. But that was actually where Verstappen, in qualifying, made his biggest gains, which is crazy. So it really just points to how good a groove he was in all weekend. He did one run in Q1, Q2 and Q3, obviously had the penalty, but that was still good enough for pole position. And yeah, it's just hard to see any weaknesses in the package right now. One of the drivers passed a comment on, I'm trying to remember who, hang on. Charles Leclerc passed a comment on Saturday after qualifying, saying that if the RB18 had been designed for any track, it would seem like it's been designed for Spa, which I thought was quite telling. And yeah, Mattia Binotto, he said after the race that unfortunately Ferrari hasn't got any hope that the it was purely a track-specific thing that was why they were so far behind this weekend. I think it maybe has exaggerated and exacerbated some of the differences between Red Bull and Ferrari. But overall, you just can't get away from the fact that that Red Bull package, it just seems better in every single area than the Ferrari right now. And yeah, that is very, very bad news if your name is Charles Leclerc, because the title race just keeps getting bleaker and bleaker. And that's before we bring in any sort of like team strategy errors or on-track mistakes or anything, as we've seen over the past few races.
Jess, Max Verstappen seems to have gone into the settings and turned the AI drivers to easy today, because there was no competition.
It was almost Brazil 2021-esque, wasn't it, in terms of how easily Hamilton picked through the field last year, and Max seemingly so this year in Spa. And, you know, two very different tracks, two very different situations, but in terms of the ease at which they cut through the pack was pretty incredible. Even just that, how quickly he made those positions up on, I mean, you know, Spa, as everybody listening knows, and as Crofty keeps liking to remind us, longest circuit on the calendar. The gaps can open up and make, if you don't get your passes done early and you don't get the strategy right, then you can lose out quite massively. I think Verstappen was aiming for podium when he was starting out, because he thought that the likes of Sainz and Perez, in equal machinery, you would imagine would be as far up the road as he could possibly get by the time that Max would have been able to fight through the traffic and get within striking distance. So I think he was thinking a podium would be great, thanks. And he showed everybody up. Like, I think I tweeted after this, like, this is Max Verstappen's championship and everybody else is just taking part. Like, there's nobody that can bring it to him. He is just on another level. And obviously we know that the likes of Charles Leclerc is an amazing talent, but in order to win championships, you have to have everything go your way in terms of team, package, car, strategy, driver. Everything has to sing. And I guess the difference as well is, with the case of Red Bull, is that their challenger last year was Mercedes, that arguably are a stronger competitor than this year's Ferrari. So they've had a year of having to be at their absolute optimum, no mistakes, everything tuned to absolute perfection in every sense of that word. And they're showing that that's not stopped. Like, they've got it right this year, as we keep saying. I mean, it's starting to get a bit repetitive and boring. And as Luke says, you know, the fear that I have is that we're, for the rest of the season, we're kind of just going through the motions. Like, we're just going to turn up at these races and we're probably just going to go through the motions from this point on, which is such a shame in comparison to how competitive last season was. But we knew there was always a risk of that with the new era of Formula One. But yeah, Max was just in an absolute class of his own. He showed up his teammate yet again. I mean, that's kind of what he does. And Ferrari were just, again, just seemed to fall apart at the seams, both in terms of luck. I mean, I'm sure we're going to go on to the helmet visor strip that essentially kiboshed Leclerc's entire race. But yeah, like, Perez didn't have an answer and he started from P2. So it's, there's, yeah, he's on another planet, another universe right now in terms of his performance in Formula One this year.
He finished 17.841 seconds up the road, not 2 weeks. I'll correct myself. Max Verstappen, I'll do the quick top 10 for you, and we'll come to Hayden. Max Verstappen, followed by Sergio Perez, 1-2 for Red Bull. They'll be delighted. Their number two driver doing exactly why he's on the payroll. Carlos Sainz in third, followed by George Russell, only a couple of seconds behind, who had some good pace at the end of the race. And then Fernando Alonso in sixth was Charles Leclerc with a 5-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane. Esteban Ocon in seventh, Vettel in eighth, ninth Pierre Gasly in tenth, Alexander Albon on a point for Williams, and a fantastic result for them. Hayden, let's come to you. So as we get into the second half of the season, or well, we're way past the halfway point really in terms of the numbers of races. If I think back to Australia, Charles Leclerc left Australia with 45 or 46 points lead in the championship, and now we're talking about where will Max wrap it up rather than if Max will wrap it up. How did you watch today's race in terms of a dominant performance?
Yeah, I mean, I can only echo what everyone's already said in terms of Max Verstappen's race. At some point, I think it was roughly lap 26, 27, he was that many seconds in the lead. And given he started 13th, 14th grid slot, but 13th cars ahead of in position, it just sort of astounded. I said to our colleague, Jake Boxall-Legg, just before the race, I said, what lap do you think he'll be in the lead? And sort of predicting that. And we both overestimated it massively, let's put it that way. Absolutely dominant. And on Leclerc's point, which I'm sure we'll get onto now, is a combination of bad luck with that sort of visor tear off and how that came about. But then, sort of fighting back, getting through to a solid position. But then Ferrari's strategy call now. Do you want to get onto that immediately? Or is that just another moment where just like, Ferrari finding new and inventive ways to throw away good results?
Let's talk about how their two, Leclerc and Verstappen's races diverge. Because actually they both had really good first laps. Verstappen and Leclerc stayed out of trouble. The only incident ahead of them was when Lewis Hamilton retired because of coming together with Fernando Alonso trying to go around the outside. We'll come on to that in a second. So they didn't inherit a ton of places because of some sort of chaotic start that wiped out five or six cars. Both had a good first lap, but then we find out that over the summer break, the new tactic of the Red Bull drivers, clearly they've been practicing ripping off their visors and getting it into the brake ducts of their opposition. This is the level of detail that Formula One teams will go to for a slight advantage. Luke, can you explain, now that an investigation's been done into why Leclerc had some overheating brakes at the beginning and what was found in the brake duct, if you can fill us in, Luke?
So yeah, Ferrari obviously had a good look at what they pulled out of Charles Leclerc's front right brake duct after bringing him into the pits under the safety car. And what they found was Max Verstappen's visor tear off. And it's, an incredible twist of luck that of all the drivers to have thrown a tear off and for the one to land in Leclerc's brake duct, it was Verstappen of all people. Yeah, it was very, very weird twist of fate. And we've been back over the onboards as well, and it all adds up as they're coming out of, I believe it's Stavelot, on the long run up towards Blanchimont. Verstappen, having gone through all the sort of like gravel and muck being cleared up through all that first lap madness, he tears off a visor strip. And a couple of seconds later, Leclerc, obviously just behind him, goes through the same part of the track. And you can see something floating into the front right of Leclerc's car. So yeah, it all adds up that it's Verstappen's tear off. Just remarkable how it works. Martin, I know he jokes about it, but yeah, it is quite Mario Kart, isn't it? When you kind of line up the red shell behind you, who you're going to throw it at? And of all people, Verstappen, got it into Leclerc. So quite crazy. Verstappen was asked about it after the race, and he was like, oh, I hope that wasn't the case, obviously, because yeah, it kind of changed what the race would have been. And Leclerc, obviously, he would have finished, I think, much higher up. He would have had a much more straightforward race, I think. Wouldn't have obviously beaten Verstappen, no chance at all. Red Bull were in a league of their own today. But it definitely had a really big impact, I think, on the race. And also, actually, had a factor late on as well, because Ferrari said that the overheating actually caused some of the sensors in the car to fail. And they reckon that actually contributed to Leclerc breaking the speed limit in the pit lane on his final pit stop, obviously, when he came in with, two laps to go. So yeah, another way it kind of had a role. So not only did it cost Leclerc a lot of time in the beginning of the race, but it actually cost him 5 seconds and fifth down to sixth in the final classification as well.
And he only broke the speed limit by 1 kilometer per hour or 1 mile per hour. It was tiny, but it's, you know, the rule is the rule. Let's just talk about the first big incident of the race, which is the coming together of Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso. Then they both got pretty good starts, and they were both battling on lap one. Afterwards, Lewis held his hand up and said, yeah, absolutely, that was completely my fault. In the heat of the moment, Alonso had a few choice words as well. But how did you read that?
I read it as the stewards found it to be, was a lap one racing incident. I think, yeah, Lewis was very adamant that he was the one to blame. He said Alonso was in his blind spot and he just didn't see him. And unfortunately got absolutely pelted into no man's land and damaged his floor. And that was the end of his race. And what shocked me the most was the fact that Fernando was seemingly unimpeded by that collision in any way, shape or form. The team said that there was no major damage. We've heard that potentially he had a slow puncture that he had to manage for until he came in for his first pit stop, but it didn't seemingly impact his pace at all, which is pretty crazy. I want to know what that Alpine is made of, because it's some pretty strong stuff. There was no small collision. It launched Lewis into the air. So obviously, you know, the way in which they came together obviously meant that Hamilton received more damage, but yeah, that was quite an interesting coming together. I mean, I think, you know, it was pretty ballsy to the you know, the setup, you know, going around the outside there when it's such a tight, twisty part of the coming off the Kemmel Straight. It's just a bit you know, ballsy, but yeah, I think you know, it was. There was respect between the two, even if, you know, Fernando did get a bit heated. I think in that moment in time, when you have just had an amazing start, it's the highest that you've started for your team. Or yeah, is that his highest start for Alpine so far?
No, he started second.
That was right. Okay, yeah, okay. But still, you know, they're not used to getting onto the second row, so they're gonna want to be pulling in as many points as possible. So you can understand frustration, heat at the moment, lots of adrenaline going. The start of the race, you know, is when it's probably adrenaline is at its highest. There's so many other cars around you. You're trying to make up as many positions as you possibly can. Like, I think in a way you can maybe forgive him. Fernando is always a bit on the spicier side. But I did think it was good that when the media doing what the media does in terms of poking the bear when Lewis was in the TV pen and asking him, well, did you hear what Fernando said? He said, I don't actually care what he said, because I was at fault. So what he said doesn't matter. I'm sure it wasn't nice, you know, that's fine. I mean, later on, he was told exactly what Fernando had said, and he's then said, well, I'm not going to go talk to him. But I think, you know, it was he held his hands up, and I think again talking about the way that these things pan out, I don't know if Fernando would have spoken about him so nicely after the race had he not raised his hands up and said that was my fault. I think, you know, Fernando is Fernando's biggest fan, so I think, you know, he might have been a bit different had it not gone that way. But yeah, I mean, lap one incident, it was a real shame, because I think we could have had maybe a bit of a more competitive race at the front had we also had the likes of Hamilton up there as well. And, you know, the Alpines looked absolutely rapid around Spa. Their straight line speed was insane. So it would have been, you know, it would have been better had we not had that incident. And also, you know, we do want to keep some of the championship battle, even if it is just constructors, alive a little bit. And obviously having a car not finish does dampen Mercedes' charge in that respect, considering how strong they looked off the back of Hungary. So yeah, I think one of those things, really.
Let's talk a little bit about Mercedes' pace, because we saw at times they had some pace. Today we saw Russell make a pretty decent move, although admittedly with DRS on, it was Leclerc, wasn't it? So we wouldn't have known, we should have known really what Hamilton could have done in that car. But Luke, can I just come back to you on Mercedes pace? Because I want to talk a little bit about qualifying and your podcast yesterday with Matt Hugh, because qualifying pace was awful and race pace today wasn't too much to write home about. So what is going on with Mercedes pace? We thought they perhaps might come back really strong after the summer break.
I think Mercedes thought the same thing, to be honest with you. I think they've, it's look, they're still trying to get to the bottom of the W13 and the issues with it. And as much as Hungary did seem like such a big breakthrough, one of the big weaknesses for the car this year has been tyre warm-up. And when you have a track like Spa, which it's Spa, we know the weather, it's going to be a bit sort of like mizzly and a bit drizzly and a bit grey and a bit cold. And that for qualifying was a bit of a perfect storm really for Mercedes to struggle as much as they did. And I think we've seen throughout the season that typically they've been better on a Sunday than a Saturday. I think we saw that again today. I don't think they were as far adrift as perhaps they anticipated. But they were still not really in anywhere sort of anywhere where Mercedes should be or wants to be right now. So I think that they've still got a lot of work to do with this car to properly understand it. But as you said earlier, we're way past the halfway point of the season now. I think we'll be 2/3 through after this next weekend in Zandvoort. So it's you're kind of thinking now they just have to get through it and say, right, what can we learn that will help next year's car? But otherwise, what are we going to do when we have a blank sheet of paper and we can look at the W14? And Lewis Hamilton said after qualifying, you just kind of have to laugh off the struggles now. He said that there's loads of people back at the factory working so hard, so he doesn't want to say, oh, I'm super disappointed or anything like that, because, that'll bring them down. So I think they'll take the positives they can, but it just, again, this... So it's such a weird picture we have of Mercedes right now, that you go from Hungary where you're on pole. I think there's a case that George Russell could have won that race, maybe had things played out a little bit differently, but they got a double podium, pretty competitive. And then they come to Spa and then they're just nowhere again compared to Red Bull in particular. So the clouded pitch just continues, and it'll be, again, wouldn't surprise me if we then go to Zandvoort next weekend and all of a sudden they're really competitive again, just because of how up and down this picture has been throughout the season.
Yeah, and it must be strange working Mercedes-Benz after such a long period of domination. I was at Silverstone Classic this weekend, and the way that I go into Silverstone on the A43 and you turn right at the big roundabout and you pass Mercedes headquarters, I couldn't help but think, I wonder what morale is like. I wonder what it's like inside a team that's had such a long period of dominance, and yet it's not like they know the problem with their car. It's that they can't get their head around this car, and we're very quickly heading towards 2023. And I guess you could say the same about Ferrari as well. An amazing start to the season, and today Carlos Sainz, the best that they could do for Ferrari, Hayden, was coming home in third. And at the beginning of the race, Red Bull were talking about, it should be a podium for Max Verstappen, but Ferrari just had nothing in response today, Hayden. How did you read Ferrari's race, their pace, and anything that you've read afterwards as well?
Yeah, I think you got a bit spot on there in terms of, for example, obviously Carlos Sainz getting away at the start, keeping the lead. Good opening sort of stint on a few laps, obviously, before the safety car came out. Didn't really put a wheel wrong, you would say. And even on his strategy, it was normal, which I think is nice. And they didn't do anything sort of too wild or out of the box, but just purely just did not have the pace of the Red Bulls, which is, again, a story we have heard quite a few times this season on being track dependent. And it's one of those where, much like Mercedes, perhaps their car in certain situations just isn't sort of at this world beater level that you can see from Red Bull. And obviously the Red Bull, I mean, in the hands of Max Verstappen. Carlos Sainz finishing the race sort of 26 seconds behind the winner, 9 seconds behind Perez. So, I think if you ask sort of Carlos Sainz deep down, what did he think was going to happen in this race? I think that was probably it. Like he pretty much said, like, he expected Verstappen to come through, and obviously Russell predicted that Verstappen would win, and he was right. I think everyone really knew. And so him picking up a third place, he probably looks at it tonight and goes, that was all I could, that's all she could do, that's all I could do. So it's a funny one, really. But as you say, it's disappointing. Maybe they will sort of find a few things here and there, but they just don't have enough, and there's not enough time now anymore. They've got literally a few days until the next race. It's a triple header, and then we move straight on to Monza, where, again, straight line speed is going to be all all key. And yeah, it's in a straight fight with Red Bull, it's just not, it's not going their way. So
what? What do you think it's doing to the drivers? Because, look, Carlos Sainz today finishing, as you say, 26, 27 seconds off of Max Verstappen and being caught by George Russell, only just over 2 seconds behind him at the end. And then Charles Leclerc finishing sixth with a five-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane. But what do you think about the drivers and what, how they're feeling at the
moment? I think you could probably split it in terms of the pressure and probably expectation isn't necessarily or hasn't ever been on Carlos Sainz. And yeah, I think given the mistakes that he made very early in the season, sort of those spins in Melbourne and Spain, it sort of, yeah, he was always on the back foot and therefore didn't have that sense of I'm fighting for a title. He almost probably knew that he was, if they were in a title fighting position, he'd be playing the Sergio Perez role to Max Verstappen at Red Bull. Whereas, yeah, Charles Leclerc, almost the opposite of that, is the car was certainly at the start of the year having those that fight and that title fight potential in it, and he made, yeah, as well as the team of course, quite a few critical mistakes, no more so than crashing out of the lead in France. Now obviously the car has let go in a few other occasions, races before that, and that's where we all know and it's been well documented that he's dropped a hat full of points. But yeah, he said over the summer break he sort of tried to have a mental reset. I don't think this race will do much to that. Granted, again, with the situation that played out in front of him, he can't, well, apart from the pit lane issue, he can't really sort of fault himself on that. But it's just the reality of where they're at the moment. And I think, unfortunately, perhaps give it the next two races, but they may just accept that, yeah, the title fight is over for this year and already start to think for next year. Because Leclerc himself said, I was asked about how does he see his sort of title fight or title picture from here on out, and he just called it very difficult. Now I don't think it needs to go too much further to go very difficult to impossible. So yeah, it will play on their minds, and I think this will feel like a missed opportunity, particularly with the margin of difference between Verstappen and the rest of the drivers or Red Bull and Ferrari. But I think maybe just put this down to a learning year and come back stronger next year, which is a bit depressing to say when it's not even September, but here we are.
Yeah, but we are at the beginning of a new rule set, and whoever gets ahead, as we've seen for the last year's domination with Mercedes. Luke, can you fill us in on some of the technical changes that are happening at the beginning of next year and the rule stability going forward? With Red Bull have got a lead now, it becomes enormously difficult to not only catch up but then surpass a team in that development race.
It really does, yeah. I think we have to not treat every rule set like we did going from 21 to 22, because this was such a huge revolution for Formula One in terms of the technical rulebook and how teams would design their cars and everything like that. And from now on, it is going to be an evolution. And Mattia Binotto was asked about after the race, saying, look, when do you guys say, look, we're not going to win the championship, but let's put everything into next year. And he said, well, everything you do with this car, you're learning. And actually, the weakness is if you fix issues on the car this year, he picked out tyre deg, for example, this weekend at Spa. He said, if we learn, okay, what caused that tyre deg at Spa? What made it so bad? That will still help for next year. So there isn't actually the same kind of value in going, actually, look, let's just forget this year, write it off, put everything onto next season. But where you can make a big gain is on the budget cap, because obviously that is, again, such a huge thing. Every team is under that now. Every team has to work towards it. So you can maybe say, right, let's put a little bit more resources, maybe more money into next year's car. So it is a bit of a balance to strike. In terms of outright technical changes, I mean, the biggest thing obviously was in the news over the summer break is the raising of the floor edges. That's a compromise of 15 millimetres. That's been done on safety grounds to try and limit porpoising. Been less of an issue in recent times, of course, but the FIA said it wanted to act because it didn't want an NFL or rugby situation where you have drivers in years down the line reporting head injuries or illnesses or things like that that you could attribute to that sort of porpoising effect and being shaken up and down. So, it's a big change, and it's something they're going to have to adapt to. But I say big, again, I think against the context of there not being many other changes, to be honest. So it's definitely, I think, something they have to weigh up a little bit in terms of when you make that crossover, but it's nothing like it was last year. So, I think there is maybe the, not worry, but it's something to think about, that if Red Bull have already got a good march under these regs, how much is that going to be baked in? A bit like Mercedes when we saw the V6 hybrid engines came in 2014, it was quite clear, well, that's going to be that for a little while then, and that's how it proved to be. I think Ferrari and Mercedes will obviously do a lot to get back in the fight. I think that Mercedes in particular, they can look at different car concepts and things like that for next year. They've said that next year's car is not going to look anything like this year's one in terms of, I think, what they do. So we may see them go down maybe a bit of a Red Bull style kind of design path. But I think if you're Red Bull, and I think you have to give them a lot of credit, because they came through one of the most intense title fights we've seen in F1 history last year, defeated Mercedes, and still produced a car that is the class of the field this season. So they've done a really good job. And yeah, it could well be that we're maybe at this rate, are we into a sort of Verstappen Red Bull era, as we've seen with Hamilton and Mercedes, or Vettel and Red Bull before that?
Well, that is ominous to think
about. Yeah, sorry
well.
If anyone had any hope for the next 5 years, but yes.
I do sort of share that. It does, at least right here, right now, feel like that is, yeah, I mean, he put in a phenomenal drive, and he has been driving incredibly well, and he's in by far the best car. So, you know, that combination is fairly, yeah, fairly daunting for the rest of them. So
let's play a game of F1 Manager. And Jess, let's put you on the pit wall, and you are leading the Ferrari team. You are Mattia Binotto, in which case,
I've got
what
some
would
great
you do?
Glasses.
Or Mattia's been fired and you are in charge. You can pick whichever one you want. Like that's the thing that surprises me about how competitive, like fiercely competitive teams are. That Toto Wolff and Christian Horner, you know that they will go in to battle, to fight. Sometimes they'll spout nonsense on Sky Sports. But just to defend their team, Ferrari, from a country that is full of passion... I'm not falling back on lazy cultural stereotypes. Italians are full of passion. Ferrari just seems so dispassionate about things. Like, there's mistakes, there's bad results, and they're like, nah, it's okay, don't worry, we'll talk, we'll look at the data. Just, you know, let's make you the boss of Ferrari. What? How do we fix this?
That's a big question, Martin. Well, it feels like when you look at teams like Mercedes and like Red Bull, and Luke and I talk about this a lot, because there is there's a book that Toto Wolff brought in that's to do with, it's called, is it called Legacy, Luke? Is that what it's called?
Legacy, yes.
And it's an amazing book about leadership and how top performing sports teams, what it is about them that makes them so amazing. And the core principle is vision. And vision setting creates this element of togetherness, and this element of togetherness almost flows through every single member of the team, so that there's almost like this silent communication. Everybody knows where they stand. Everybody knows what they need to do. Everybody knows what their contribution to the team is, and it creates this almost superpower. So it's based on like the All Blacks rugby team and why they were so dominant. And a lot of it has to do with Maori culture of togetherness. And it's a really interesting read. If you've never read it, I would wildly recommend it. It's a fascinating book about techniques and top tier performance. But so when you look at teams like Mercedes and Red Bull, you have this just innate sense of togetherness, innate sense of we are all in this together. We have clear vision, we have clear direction, we have clear strategy. And obviously I've not been inside the inner sanctum of Maranello. I don't know what the inner talkings are, but it does seem like even today, and with the choice radio messages that we got played out to us over the world feed, there just seems to be this sense of no one knowing what's going on, no one being clear, no one being on the same page, and there just being this like real sense of despondency, which you're not gonna be able to come back from that. You know, even though Mercedes have been knocked off their pedestal, you still get that same sense that everybody is Team Mercedes. Everybody is fighting for everything. Mm. And almost their failure together is bringing them closer together. It's that sense that I feel they're missing. They're missing clear leadership, direction, vision, the cohesion that a team operating at this level needs to have if it wants to win championships. Maybe they need to get a performance coach going in and teaching them all about legacy. Maybe Toto Wolff needs to lend Mattia his book.
I need a Formula One team principal book club.
I would attend. That would be great. But yeah, I think that's kind of what is missing. And there's obviously been a lot of questions about Binotto, but that's been following him ever since he took the job, as to whether he actually is a solid team leader, or actually if he's better being more of a technical director, which was where he kind of was before he took on the team principal role. And obviously things were put in place at Ferrari over the years in terms of taking the technical stuff away from him because he was still involved in it, so that he could focus on the management side. But yeah, no, a team is only as good as its leader. And at this point in time, there are still those question marks there. And I know, I mean, what else is Binotto going to come out and say after that? Like, what is he going to say?
I don't want to come across like all team principals, you know, CEOs, whatever role they play in the team, need to be some sort of desk thumping Neanderthal that just shouts. And I'm not suggesting that, but you know, you look at when Sergio Perez got a terrible virtual safety car restart. And let's face it, he did mess that up. And George Russell got the jump on him and he lost a place. And after the race, Christian Horner's like, I don't know, maybe Mercedes are getting different FIA radio messages. Like, that's so preposterous. But that's the length that he'll go to, you know, sort of divert the attention away from our driver messed up with something as crazy as, oh, hang on a minute, are we getting different information? Like, of course that's not true. But that's why Christian's so brilliant at that kind of sort of media game that he plays. And the same with Toto Wolff as well, always defending his. And there just seems to be with Ferrari this, you know, like yesterday they put the wrong tyres on in qualifying, yeah. And then they're like, oh yeah, on the radio, like, oh yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, no, we got that wrong. Sorry.
It's just not good enough, is it? I mean, if
light
anything,
fire,
you know, Ferrari do not deserve to win anything this year. They do not deserve to win anything. They've been sloppy. They've made too many mistakes. It's, you know, regardless of how much we want a competitive season, fact is they don't deserve it. So it's harsh. I don't want to be sat here saying this, but you cannot win. I mean, I would stop watching Formula One if a sloppy team like that could win a championship, because it's just not, it's not why we watch Formula One, right? This is the pinnacle of motorsport. Maybe I've come off the wrong side of the bed after watching the race or something, but it's just, I'm just tired of it now. I'm sure everybody is. I'm sure Ferrari are tired of it. I'm sure, you know, as much as I'm sure Red Bull are loving the fact that they're cruising to their, you know, two titles, not just the driver's title, but easily the constructor's title too. It's going to be like, yeah, we do want competition, a little bit of competition. It's why we go out and race, right? People don't just go out there to, you know, have a lovely Sunday drive. They're competitors, so. Yeah, I think it's just, it is sad. I had such high hopes for Ferrari. They did come out with an incredible car, considering where they had been over the past couple of years. And it's just, yeah, something has to give. And when, I'm not suggesting that is Binotto out. I'm not suggesting that is, you know, massive shakeups, but something has to change. There are clearly gaps and things that aren't quite right there, and they're going to have to get on top of them in one way or another.
And there will be pressure at Ferrari, and you got the national, you got the press, you got Gazzetta dello Sport, and there will be huge media pressure and fan pressure on Ferrari as well. Luke, just fill us in with what happened with the attempt at the fastest lap. Can you explain that to the listeners?
Oh, yeah. So two laps to go, Ferrari said, Charles, we're going to bring you in. We're going to give you a set of softs and let's go for the fastest lap. There was a bit of back and forth on the radio, Leclerc saying, are you sure you want to do this? And yeah, again, that uncertainty, as Jess sort of spoke about, like it doesn't seem clear. And in the end, they went for it. Leclerc came out of the pits. He was, they always knew it was going to be quite tight with Alonso. He came out and managed to get past Alonso, but then along the Kemmel straight, Alonso, because the Alpine straight line pace has been so good all weekend, he got Leclerc back, and that compromised Leclerc for the rest of the lap and for the start of the final lap. In the end, Leclerc did repass Alonso, so he got back to fifth, which is where he'd started. Then on the following lap, Leclerc did manage to repass Alonso, so he got back to fifth, which is where he'd been before he came into the pits. But his fastest lap attempt didn't come off. It was a 149.9. Verstappen had the fastest lap with a 149.3, so basically it had been a bit of a wasted opportunity by Ferrari. And also, he ended up getting the 5-second penalty for speeding when he came into the pits, so it dropped into sixth. So it was a net loss of a place and, what, 2 points for Ferrari. So it did look like it all really backfired. Leclerc said afterwards that he wasn't frustrated about Ferrari bringing him in or anything like that. Same thing he said. I asked him the same question 2 days in a row, saying, is it getting frustrating having these little sort of tyre slip-ups and mistakes coming? And he was like, no, it's fine. And just thinking, how much is of that frustration is just like a brave face? Like, how much is it bubbling under the surface? I asked Mattia Binotto about it, and I said, like, again, it just seems that it's just a bit confusing. Like, fans are sort of saying, like, you've got plans A to D and all of this, and you're asking Charles, well, do you want the mediums or the hards? And he's like, well, why are we pitting? And it's, well, if we do this and do that. But also said something he said a few weeks ago, that he thinks it is perceived in a wrong way from the outside, that actually things that are being played up as mistakes are not mistakes, that it's the right call. And he said that the decision to go for the fastest lap was entirely the right call. He said, we had to be brave, like, we have to be bold in Formula One and roll the dice. And I get that, but also it was all to gain 1 point. Like, I know, okay, you want to maximise your potential, but it was always going to be so tight with Alonso. There was always that risk that it wouldn't come off. If Charles was 40 seconds ahead of the car in front, fine, because you're not going to lose a position and really you can't lose anything. But he wasn't. So I really don't understand why they did it. And again, there just isn't the sort of like, oh yeah, we're going to have to go away and look at this because clearly it didn't work out. It's, oh no, like we definitely made the right call, but it was all very unlucky and not our fault, basically. Yeah, I just think that it was another little mistake, and all of these things are adding up. And you just, I agree with Jess, like, Ferrari don't deserve to win a championship like this, because it just seems so unclear. We don't hear Mercedes or Red Bull over the radio in a similar way with their drivers. It's all very direct and said, look, box this lap, or this is happening, or that's happening. And with Ferrari, there just seems to be almost every race now something happens, goes wrong, and becomes a talking point for us.
I think on genuine pace and on merit, Ferrari have won one race this year. Let's start with, so Leclerc won in Bahrain, obviously both Red Bulls went pop. Australia, Leclerc won, Verstappen's engine went pop. Sainz won at Silverstone, but Verstappen picked up damage, dropped down the order. It was generally an amazing race, but there was so much going on that really, and Joe at the start, bit of a crazy race. Sainz ends up on top. Austria is probably the genuine one, because Leclerc won, overtook Verstappen, what, two, three times, fair and square. But that circuit is almost a little bit of an outlier. And they managed not to make any strategy mistakes. But at that same race, Sainz's engine went pop. So, like, there's arguably been one race where it has gone all to plan, and yet they only finished with one car. Just not good enough, really. And I think you've got, hit the nail on the head there in terms of the culture and the messaging. Like, if Leclerc's saying one thing in the media to sort of keep face, but then is actually feeling another thing, saying, oh, I'm not frustrated, or I'm not sort of disappointed or whatever, then he needs to sort of be making that point clear. Because let's compare it to Verstappen when it wasn't going right at Red Bull. Even this season, when his engine was playing up in Hungary qualifying, as recently as then, he was going absolutely mental. And you know that the team would have been like, we can't keep making these mistakes. Hamilton obviously is trying to generally keep a positive spin on it, but he has clearly been at the team and at the car. He hates this car, I think, as you could safely say. and you look at Ferrari as well, and it's like, if Leclerc's going to be this lead driver, he needs to have that ruthlessness about him as well. Whether it comes from Leclerc, whether it comes from Binotto, it doesn't necessarily matter. It just needs to come from within and just say, right, sort it out. Just sort out the reliability, sort out those strategy calls, make it clear, here's the plan, here's the ethos, and go from there. Because otherwise, they'll have a half-decent car, and they'll have a half-decent driver lineup, and they'll have a half-decent engine, but they'll always play second fiddle to a Red Bull or a Mercedes or whoever that are putting the pieces together and winning these championships.
And the thing with the stop for fastest lap today, it's not like taking 1 point away from Red Bull is going to make any difference. Why did you throw away 2 points? just to take a point away from them, which you then ended up not taking away and losing yourself 2 points. It was just that, like, what, with Binotto going, yes, but we have to take ballsy calls. For what? What? Like, you're also meant to be very good, like, you know, risk balancers. You're meant to go and say, yes, that is worth the risk. Please, someone tell me where that was worth the risk. I genuinely don't know. Unless there was a real issue that Leclerc's tyres were going to fall off a cliff, which we saw, like, we only got thermal deg today. So it's like, what? Why? And at what point was that going to be the right call?
What should have come in, and this may have happened, but I can't say without hearing the ready message, is setting, so 4 or 5 laps towards the end, they know they're not going to catch those ahead of them, and they know the gap to Alonso. Tell Leclerc, right, I'm going to pit you probably in a few laps, hit this delta time so we have a pit stop in hand to Alonso. Don't even put that element of risk in. If he gets there, great, then you can do it. The only thing that probably goes wrong then is if they mess up the pit stop, which they have done recently, so, you know, it's not a foolproof plan. But it didn't seem like that came into plan. It seemed like, oh, it's a bit of a risk, but we'll go for it. And it's like, you had so much time to think about it and to put it in place. But yeah, it didn't work. But talking about off plans, I know we're absolutely piling on Ferrari now, which is harsh, but I did, to lighten the mood, I did really enjoy Norris being told about this. It's too late for Plan G.
Plan G.
Yeah, which, like, Ferrari have got all those plans, but, like, not like McLaren have got Plan G, and I really want to know what that is. So please, McLaren, tell me what Plan G is.
I almost messaged Lando's engineer and asked if he was trolling Ferrari or if that was an actual... Like, was that legit? Were you legit on Plan G? I know Ferrari are a bit of a meme about having Plan A to Z, but it's like, I'm sure a lot of them, they do have to have different scenario planned out. That, I mean, how else do you tell your driver, right? Because obviously you don't want to tell your competitors what you're doing over the radio to the driver. So you do need clear indicators to say, we're going to double stop, or we're going to, run long, extend the stint and come in later. So I do get it, but it is very, very rare that we hear any other team go past Plan B. So it was funny. I'll try and find out what Plan G was.
Let's talk about Alpine a bit, because on Friday's podcast, we also played a game of let's put you in charge. I did that with Hayden. I said, right, you're CEO of Alpine. Does someone lose their job over losing... It seems not one, but two great drivers over the course of a few days. And also you sat on the fence.
I feel bad for sitting on the fence.
If someone's being fired in the morning. But a great race today for Alpine. A fantastic result, some brilliant racing as well, we saw with Fernando Alonso somehow surviving that massive collision with Alonso, his front left, and Alonso's front left, Hamilton's rear right. But hey, they build them strong, as Jess says. Alonso coming home fifth because of that 5-second penalty for Leclerc, getting promoted a place, which is great for Alpine. And also Ocon, who we saw some, not one, but two double overtakes. And another great great race for him, coming home seventh today. Who will be driving for them next year? Oh, we still don't know where it'll shake out. By the way, Jack Doohan took his third victory of the season at Spa in F2.
Yeah, Alpine were like Oscar who?
It could mean nothing. Oscar who? It could mean nothing. Anyway, so Luke, what did you make of Alpine today, and some great racing by Ocon as well?
Oh, Esteban Ocon, what a man. I literally, that overtake on the double overtake on Gasly and Vettel, it was like Hakkinen and Schumacher in, what, 2001 with Ricardo Zonta sat in the middle. And literally Ocon came over in the media pen, and the first thing I said to him was, have you been watching any Mika Hakkinen videos recently? And he laughed and he said, I actually spoke to Mika before the race, and obviously not about that move or anything. But he said it was just one of those things where the straight line speed of the Alpine was so good all weekend. And he said he also really, really worked out well how to get all the right detection points and everything like that for DRS. So with that move in particular, basically he worked out that Vettel was going too early, and that meant that he wasn't picking up the DRS on Gasly. He was going for the overtake too early. So in the end, Ocon was like, right, I'm going to sort of ease off a little bit, give myself a bit more of a slingshot. Lined up that move perfectly and got both of them. And he said that Vettel could have maybe squeezed me a bit more. Vettel said that he
felt like he had no weapons in that fight because he was without DRS. And yeah, Ocon just slung it around both of them. And it was such a great move. And yeah, a really great display by him. He said after the race that he feels that's the best race he's had with Alpine, full stop. And this is a man who's won a Grand Prix with Alpine. And it was a really, really great performance from them. So yeah, I thought Ocon drove absolutely superbly to come through the field as he did. You've got to wonder what they could have done had both of them started up at the top end. And yeah, for Alonso, I think given the clash with Hamilton, he's come away with a really good haul of points. And really, I don't think he could have done anything more than fifth had it not been for the clash with Hamilton. I think he would have fallen back naturally to that kind of position anyway. So yeah, I think Alpine could be really pleased with this weekend. I think that they were always going to go strongly, but in the context of this fight with McLaren, it's a big step forward they've taken. McLaren have always said, we don't really know how we're still in the fight with Alpine because we're sort of, struggling to keep up ground. It's maybe some sort of good weekends have masked some of the issues with our car. But I think we're now starting to see just how much stronger Alpine is than McLaren this year. And also on the driver front, Alpine have two regular scoring drivers, which in McLaren's case, they don't really, with the greatest respect to Daniel Ricciardo. A really difficult day for McLaren as well. They just had no straight lines speed whatsoever, so yeah, neither Norris nor Ricciardo stood much of a chance. But even for Daniel, started seventh, a long way ahead of Lando, and then ends up behind him, so not a great day for them. But yeah, for Alpine, I think they've done a really good job this weekend. And yeah, Esteban Ocon, I'm not in charge of driver ratings, but if I was, I would be giving him a 10 out of 10. I hope Matt Q can hear me in the room next door, but yes, great result for him.
10 out of 10 drive. Lando Norris, as you mentioned, in 12th for McLaren. Daniel Ricciardo in 15th. And in terms of Alpine, Luke, we won't hold you to it, but just for fun, who could be driving alongside Ocon next year? Because obviously the contract recognition board meet next week.
Tomorrow. They meet tomorrow. Yeah.
As our listeners are tuning into this. But the thing is, you know, if Piastri's already gone so nuclear on social and be like, I'm not driving for them, like, you can force a driver, I suppose, to have financial compensation, or I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. That relationship, I think, is dead and buried. I think that Alpine, if they do go and win this CRB case, I think it's purely so they can say to McLaren, right, you're going to pay us if you really want Oscar that badly. Because I think that, yeah, it's not going to be a happy relationship if Alpine were to say to Oscar, but no, you've got a contract, you will race for us next year. So I think that, yeah, and we do know that Alpine are looking at other options. Our colleague at motorsport.com, Adam Cooper, did a superb piece on Saturday breaking that Pierre Gasly is actually an option for Alpine. And we know that Gasly has a contract with AlphaTauri and the team's already announced him for next year, but contracts in Formula One, they're only worth the paper they're written on at times, and this could be another case of that. And it's a situation where, yeah, Alpine might say, right, maybe they get some, let's theoretically say they win the CRB case, get a bit of money back from McLaren for Piastri, they can then take that money to Red Bull and say, right, we want Gasly, basically free him from his contract, bring him into our team. One interesting dynamic there, it's known that Gasly and Ocon don't get on brilliantly personally, haven't in the past. There's been a bit of friction and tension there. But Ocon was asked about that on Saturday and he said, we respect each other, like no issues. So it sounds like professionally things would be okay, but we'll see obviously how things
until they became teammates
in reality.
Again.
Well, yes. Ocon, of course, has a bit of a history in terms of sort of teammate tensions as well through his F1 career. But yeah, so that could be really interesting. And what that would do for AlphaTauri as well is that it may pave the way for Colton Herta, the IndyCar driver, to perhaps come into Formula One. It seems like Red Bull advisor Helmut Marko has been sort of, yeah, keeping an eye on what Herta's doing and perhaps wants to bring him in to make that F1 switch. It's been mooted for a long time. The plan was always for Andretti to field Herta if it got its Formula One team entry. That doesn't look like it's going to happen. So this might be an option for Herta. So yeah, lots of good driver movement going on. I think it's going to be an interesting few weeks. But yeah, the CRB case, they are meeting on Monday. So as you said, Martin, might be today by the time listeners are tuning into this. And yeah, we expect a decision. It could come later today. It could come in a couple of days' time, but it will be this week.
And the idea of two French drivers racing for Alpine would be interesting, channeling their inner Ligier who for a long time only featured French drivers like Lafitte and René Arnoux and others as well. It took them a while to find the courage to have a non-French driver. So it'd be very interesting to see a completely French team on the grid if Gasly did make his way over. Where should we go next? Let's talk a bit about Aston Martin. We've mentioned Fernando Alonso, his new employers, with Sebastian Vettel finishing eighth, giving a little love nudge to teammate Lance Stroll at one point and got, off you go, son, you're not coming past me, into at least... heading towards the gravel. Lance Stroll coming home just out of the points in 11th. Any thoughts on Vettel's race today from anyone in particular?
Yeah, for Vettel, a good haul of points by Aston Martin standards. It wasn't one of these races where he kind of just sneaks into the top 10 and grabs one point. It was, it was a good start. Obviously started well up the order thanks to all the penalties. A very close moment between him and Stroll on the opening lap that I think left Stroll doing a little bit of rallycross over the gravel. But I think that Aston Martin, given where that team is right now, to come away with eighth, I think that's a really good performance for him and the team. He said that, in that fight against Ocon, absolutely nothing he could do, so bit of a sitting duck. Aston Martin know where they are. I think they know that it's really a case of just, look, get to the end of the season, can we keep within sight of Haas? They're going to beat Williams, let's face it, with all due respect to Williams, who had a very good race today through Alex Albon, as I'm sure we'll get onto. But I think Vettel, nice to see him up in the sort of top five or six for a little while, rolling back the years a little bit earlier today.
And Jess, a great race for Pierre Gasly today. We've mentioned him just a moment ago, but starting from the pit lane, I think you heard that Yuki Tsunoda was going to start from the pit lane and he didn't want to get left out there. By the way, check out some of the social videos and the podcast and stuff that AlphaTauri are doing, because there's a big bromance going on there. They get on so well. It's so nice to see. Jess, Gasly did really well today.
Especially well. I think he was pretty surprised at how well he got on. More positive for him. I don't really have too much to say about Gasly, but I don't want it to be all on Luke.
No, it's all good. And a point for Alex Albon then, Jess. You want to talk about a little about his race today? They were so, like, the team are always so happy if they can get into the points, and he was so delighted as well, and really holding off a train of cars behind him. A great defensive drive towards the end of the race. There was some stuff happening at the back of the grid or the midfield that we didn't see a lot of, but a really great drive by him.
Very strong performance from Alex. We've got quite a few people during this race that we're praising, which is good. I mean, I guess that also does help when you have a field that's a bit mixed up and you've got cars out of position, but the Williams did look pretty racy in a straight line, I think even Alex himself came out and said thank God for DRS trains, because it did mean that he could keep the cars behind him at bay and kind of fend off any attack from behind. But Williams are going to be over the moon at that. I mean, the way that they do celebrate points is pretty wholesome, but I guess when you're a team that has gone through so many seasons of not taking home any or just one, it's a massive step forward for them. And I think just looking at them, their pace, it actually looked rather promising. So obviously Zandvoort next week is a bit of a different track, so whether or not we see I'm not gonna for a second say that we're going to Williams are gonna get another point next weekend. Obviously that's probably not going to happen. Could do, but never say never, as Hayden was kind of alluding to earlier. But I think Williams can be happy with at least one side of the garage. Latifi yet again, little bit more disappointing. I mean, the incident that we had...
Oh, massively disappointing.
Yeah, and the incident that we had was a really weird one. It seemed that... there wasn't any contact, but it seemed that when Ocon and Latifi were kind of having a bit of a battle at the beginning of the race, it seemed that I think Latifi got a little bit distracted by Ocon and just put a tire onto the grass, and just it sent him spinning, and then unfortunately poor Valtteri Bottas was the victim.
Happy birthday indeed. Valtteri Bottas.
But yeah,
did he get clipped by Latifi, or was it
no?
Valtteri reckons he did a little bit.
Oh, a little bit. Most of the damage was done by trying to avoid the car, but
definitely, yeah. And that's what Valtteri said. He said it was either I hit Latifi or I go into the gravel, so obviously that's the lesser of two evils there. But yeah, disappointing birthday. But we said well, we hope your birthday gets better as he left. He went, the day is still young, so I hope he's sinking a few beers this evening.
absolutely. But yeah, well done, Williams. A point in Australia, a couple of points in Miami, and a point here again. So yeah, still only 4 points, and still, you know, even a fair way behind everybody else. But great that they're on the board. Who haven't we talked about? Who is worthy of talking too much about? Some interesting performances, but yeah, the two Haas drivers coming home 16th, 17th, with Kevin Magnussen 16th and Mick Schumacher 17th. And I'll do a quick look at the championships. The Drivers' Championship, Max Verstappen, 284 points, taking all 26 points today. Sergio Perez in second, a 1-2 Red Bull, 191. Charles Leclerc down in third, 186, followed by Carlos Sainz. And then George Russell, now a decent gap ahead of Lewis Hamilton on 170, down to Lewis's 146. In the Constructors, Red Bull, just a big, big gap now. 475 plays Ferrari's 357. And Mercedes-Benz, even after a disappointing day, in fact, Toto said the worst qualifying in 10 years, or words to that effect yesterday, a disappointing weekend for them because of some consistency earlier in the season, comfortably in third place. Right, we have gone long, and I appreciate your time back in Formula One. It's great to have a race to talk about. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast today. Have your say. You can always email us, podcast@autosport.com, with any thoughts on the things that we talk about. You can follow these guys on their social media as well. And make sure you are staying tuned to the Autosport podcast, because we've got our coverage of the Silverstone, or the Classic at Silverstone, over the next couple of days, as I will be talking Porsche 956, 962s in a great depth. If that's your bag, then listen out for that. And if not, then we'll see you for another Grand Prix in just a few days' time. Thanks for listening to the Autosport podcast. We'll be back soon.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If you served in the Vietnam, Gulf War, or post-9/11 eras, you may be eligible for expanded VA benefits. A new law known as the PACT Act provides disability compensation, health care, free toxic exposure screenings, and more to veterans who are exposed to toxins during their military service. You can submit a claim for your PACT Act-related benefits now. Claims received by August 10, 2023 may be paid back to August 10, 2022. Visit va.gov/PACT to learn more and file your claim.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.